Guilherme Hostand, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you.
Thank you. And Jeremy Benyamou, welcome as well.
Thank you, Marcus.
You two are founders of the AI Summit Barcelona, which is scheduled for September this year, right? 22nd, 23rd. But this is not the first time the Summit Barcelona happens, is it?
No. The first edition was last year in October, but this year's edition is going to be much bigger because the success of the last edition pushed us to basically multiply everything by 8 or 10.
Awesome, because I was just going to ask about that, because we always joke here in the podcast, it's like 1 year in AI world is like dog years, right? It just happens so fast, things evolve so fast that the scale must follow that if you want to be relevant, right? So what are the considerations that you had to take this time around, considering that we're at least recording this in early April for the event that's going to take place in September? But speaking of the scale of what you already had to plan for to make it bigger, what were the considerations to make it an even better event than it was last year?
Well, it was, we love to say with Guillaume that at the beginning it was just a happy accident. It's just an idea that we had, almost in a bar, not exactly, but almost. And little by little, we talked, well, first both of us, and then with people. And we found a great enthusiasm. So last year, in, I think, 4 months, we just set up this, the first edition was 1,500 people. Really cool companies like was Amazon, N8N, 11 Labs. For a happy accident, we were hallucinating almost about the success. And that's why at the end of the first edition, we had great opportunity to go big. We had great opportunity to have partnership with big groups. But we had the feeling that it should be much better to stay free and to stay bootstrapped. As we constructed the first one. So the idea now is a mix between our agility and flexibility to be a bit crazy entrepreneurs without the big groups and the big corporate needed. And the fact that all the ecosystem here in Barcelona and larger than Barcelona wants to help. The magic of this city is each time that we are talking about the summit to people, the natural reaction is, how can I help? And that's why we sank at one point with Adam, Tanguy and Guillaume, the four partners of the summit. Okay, let's go big. We think we can do it.
Yeah, I think it's the opportunity. What made the success of last year's edition, obviously, was the fact that we wanted to make it cool and Barcelona vibe. So, sunshine, rooftop, music and everything, on top of very interesting content, of course. But it was also the fact that this city, Barcelona, is the first destination for corporate events and fairs, like the Mobile World Congress in Europe, but didn't have an AI event. And accidentally, we built it without knowing that it was actually us doing kind of the first big event on AI. There are workshops about, meetups, afterworks about AI everywhere at every single minute. But going to, above 1,000 people, 90 speakers, so and having this like feedback from the community that was exactly somehow what the people were waiting for, this absolutely was the reason why we wanted to go further, because of the opportunity.
My question is then, why did two Frenchmen do this in Barcelona and not two Spanish or two Catalan people?
Well, you should ask them. But I think the first answer to that is that, again, going back to the accident and kind of also what we heard afterwards, is there was a room for this event. So it's just because it was us. And I think there is, and that's the first answer. The second one is we are a bunch of expats. And, the expat community of Barcelona is very big. There's close to a third of the city was on board in Barcelona. So I think it was also a give back. And I think this motivation, really helped us to build something. But that's, why Spanish Yucatan didn't created such an event before, I can't really say. And I think, life is a lot about timing, even in AI dog's year moments. But it was really the timing. And I think the additional motivation was the fact that we do love Barcelona and we had this expat community with us. Probably it's easier to get the help and to get the involvement of the expat community, because people are living abroad and they're not with their family, not, with their local things. So maybe that was also a help, because most of the people that helped us or came were also a lot of expats, a lot of Spanish and Catalan people, but a lot of expats. So maybe it's the expat, you know, spirit of the city that also brought us to the to this stage.
I just want to add exactly in the same line the freedom that adding you to be an expat, I'm not sure that we would be able to do the same in our own country, in Paris. The fact that being expats gives you, I don't know, more freedom craziness. And maybe craziness and entrepreneurship spirit.
Cool. And Jeremy, you mentioned that the first event and this one as well, the whole idea is to be bootstrapped, meaning you don't have a lot of money. The way to finance it was a bit, like you said yourself, crazy to start with, right? So can you explain to us how it was last year and how you're doing this year with this, like with the partners, but with getting a place that is big enough for, let's say, the 1,500 people last year, for 10,000 people this year?
Yeah, and it's still crazy sometimes. Like, I mean, like, there is some days that we are thinking, oh, why we done that? But we, at one point, we will not count the whole story, but at one point, we had to make a choice between staying bootstrap or going, like, with a big corporate association. And we understood at this moment that the freedom that we have, and not only the freedom, is really precious to stay in the vibe that the event that we want to do. First stuff. And the second stuff is when you do the stuff without money, when you count each euro, you are much more, I don't know how to say,
efficient.
Exactly. Like the fact that we had to sell the tickets in a vital point last year made us create, I think, without knowing it even, but made us create the perfect event regarding to the means that we had last year. And it's the same this year. I mean, like, I think we are enough incursion in, crazy to go to something bigger than us. But in the same time, we are like realistic in what we can do and what we cannot do.
Because of this experience, yes.
Yeah. And yeah. I think it's like the mix that...
Well, adding the fact maybe that, you know, because of the success, you know, the first event, people that would finance us, if we talk about the sponsors, it's a risk, creative risk for them. Because, you know, we're talking about big corporations, and if they do a small check, is not, you know, they don't take that much risk. But we convinced a lot of sponsors. Well, at least this year, we start with a longer list of sponsors, a longer list of a shorter time for acceptance. So, you know, the asset we created last year helped us at least for the sponsors. So it's getting a bit easier to finance, but then you still have to sell the tickets.
Of course. But for example, when you are trying to create an event as big as this one, what are the steps? How did you organize this? And I mean, even like last year when you were just new to this.
It all starts to me with two things. The venue, because you need a venue, and key speakers.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a venue, thanks to our very dear friend Milo, that found us a perfect venue that was the headquarter of Glovo.
Mm-hmm.
And the key speakers, and I think it all, you know, all it, the timing didn't change, because we have to go back to the fact that firstly, we wanted to do a 300-500 people event. It was already quite ambitious. And it all changed when Luc Julia, which is France, one of the pioneers of AI in France, accepted to come and talk. And then everything started to, you know, to move kind of together in a larger, at a larger scale. So speakers and venue is the first priority you should have in any kind of event.
It's a bit like in a wedding, finally. First,
yeah.
You find the place, then
the
person
bride and the groom.
To the bride, and then you can choose the guest and the musicians.
There's this question that I have never organized. I've been in events that are kind of big, but never organized one. I enjoy my sanity. So, but I've always been curious about the scope of the subjects, because especially for AI, if we were to put this event together 10 years ago, it would be quote unquote easier, because you would know exactly who would be talking to about machine learning and everything. Today, with, you know, especially over the last few months with even vibe coding and more people getting into it, not even knowing exactly how it works, and they don't have to know how it works. That's the beauty of it, right? You have to sort of plan accordingly to have a breadth of subjects and of talks and of guests, right? That will make it a great event for everyone, even if they're not on the same technical level. What's this balancing act like?
I think, to be really honest, we go step by step. The first step, as said, Guillaume, we have to find key speakers. So to be honest, especially last year, when you find the good people to be good speakers, you know that you have a line. And then we have to move around this line, finding the all the people. This year, as we go bigger and we want to go really deep in the subject, we choose an agile organization, which is we built 7 tracks, which are quite generalist. AA for today, AA for tomorrow, AA for builder, etc. Because we knew that having these 7 tracks, we would be able to put all the subject, even the one that we even don't know today, because they will be new between tomorrow and the day before the summit itself. So inside of these 7 tracks, we have sub-tracks that I think, honestly, until the last day, we will maybe move them, and then we will provide an experience to the attendees based on AI for sure. Like, okay, I'm interested by AI for today because I want a tool for to manage my team, but I'm also interested by AI for tomorrow because I want to be responsible in my AI consumption life, and I'm also interested by AI for growth because I want to win money with my AI startup. So I will put these 3 stuff on my app on the summit application, and then we will provide a journey that can be adaptable to all the people. But I think one of the key is to stay humble and agile to be able to adapt the content and the experience till almost the last day.
Yeah, I think added to that, one of the aspects is that AI is a very, is the keyword of the last 18 months or like maybe last 3 years and probably in the next 1 year until it becomes so much everywhere that it's like internet, you know.
Yeah.
It's like the web, you know. I'm old enough to have been working in the web industry before it was renamed tech. And until that day, it's still easy to do an AI, a generic AI event. Probably we are going to the last months where, you know, people will say, okay, AI, but for what, with what, on which topic? And so we are taking advantage of the fact that we can still offer, as Jamie said, a very wide range of topics, but still name under the umbrella name of AI. Our plan for the future, and with, I think, the lessons of the second edition, is moving towards maybe more of a festival. So where you need to, because we, you know, there are 2 options, is either we specialize, so let's say we become the AI for real estate. Sorry, but it's a bit boring, but, you know, or health or banking, you know, very boring stuff. Or you move yourself, and it's a lot thanks to Barcelona, to something that is more of a South by Southwest kind of spirit. So you have business talks. Okay, it's all about AI because any business talk in the next years, even starting now, are talking about AI, you know, any kind of business talks. So if you add more and more experience, music and something that is quite fancy, then you have this mix, and or the best example being South by Southwest, where you don't really know what's the topic you want to be to live the event itself.
Okay, the whole experience, right?
Yeah, it's something that was really important for, to not say central for us, like since the day one. Like we said, okay, how can we do another AI summit? And we directly sunk because of having the guest star that nobody else have, which is Barcelona. So for example, last year, our really important stuff was a rooftop with a view. And this year, we are able to have a venue like which is literally in the middle of the port. So you have like each talk, each speaker will see the sea at each point. And we, at one point, we had to make a choice about the venue, and we really sunk with the guys that it's unique, like talking about AI and enter in a tech summit, but going out from a festival, it's something unique because like you want to talk about tech, you want to inspire yourself, you want to learn some stuff, you want to network, but at the end, it's better if you have a good moment.
Is it closed? Like, is the rain gonna come in if it rains? Or
No. The only thing is that we have a shore on the waterfront,
uh-huh.
And if it's, oh, of course, all the talks are gonna be inside, but we have the shore that can be accommodated kind of the way we want. Like, there are 100 and so meters of free space, and if it's not raining, then even if it's raining, that's where we're going to be like some social activities, music and so on. So, of course, it's a mix of the two. I mean, the water center is a closed place. We have a conference room. We have 4 spaces that we're going to arrange. But then for lunchtime, networking time, party time, it's going to be outside mostly.
That's amazing.
And I think normally we don't have to say that in public, but if the things are good, we maybe will be able to have even a floating stage. So I think the fact that being free and don't have this kind of stuff can allow us to think to cool stuff. Like last year was having a DJ at the entrance at 9 a.m. was like our crazy stuff for a tech event last year. But now it's okay, it's easy. So we can have this liberty to sing to ourselves.
Like a stage on the sea, everyone's live vests and all.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's going to be a boat. There's going to be a boat that is like going to be a 25 meters boat that can accommodate 85 people. That's maybe you're going to be for brunch, or you know, we are proposing for sponsors to be able to host some private events or public events, and also you can sell the sea with it. So I mean, that's the basic usage of it. So we booked one big boat for those kind of purposes. Yes,
amazing. And when we're speaking about these key speakers that you have to get after the venue, I live the same problem because I'm the curator of IA Conference Brazil there for like some years already, and I'm the curator this year as well. And we have the same problem that Marcus mentioned before right now, that you have to choose the people who are going to speak about a specific topic, but not forget about the other topic that other people may be interested in. But also, in general, you have to choose people who are in your area, like in Barcelona, in my case, in São Paulo or around São Paulo. We do have some freedom to bring like someone from the USA or someone from another state of Brazil.
Is that a spoiler for this year?
It is, but
it will be the same day.
It will be almost on the same day, yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be here in Barcelona for AI Summit because I'm going to be in Brazil for this one. But how did you manage, like how did you organize about choosing these people who are going to be here? Are they all people who work and live in Barcelona? Are they coming from abroad as well?
We try to have a good mix between all that. At the very beginning, we had this preoccupation. We really have to be careful to don't make a French community summit. Mm-hmm. Because we are French, so it was easy for us to have French speakers. But we directly sang that, okay, we have to onboard the city, Catalonia, Spain, and Europe. That's really important for us. So how we manage it, it's a bit the same stuff, being opportunist, because like all the opportunity are, we know someone who knows someone who knows someone who knows someone that's finally talked to someone who presented someone to us. And finally we have, okay, good, great speaker.
I was one of these people actually.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly like how we know each other. So it's kind of shaking the whole ecosystem, talking about the stuff to everybody. And then now this year, a big part of the job is to absorb this amount of opportunity and try to mix that in the good shaker for have the good thing at the end.
Yeah. We need the big speakers. I mean, you have to separate two types of speaker when you do an event. You have the speakers that makes the content, and the speaker that makes the sales. Mm-hmm. So, on the one hand, yes, what Jamie was saying is basically, as we created, you know, some noise last year, we have a lot of requests, inbound requests, and we need to filter them out. And we know that we still need to have the flagship speakers, so to say. And with this bunch of people asking us to speak and people we want, like companies, like you cannot imagine doing an AI summit these days without having someone from Anthropic. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, do something else.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have those two tracks of, okay, we have amazing people reaching out to us. I mean, like very surprisingly, people from big names. But we still need also to handpick some of the ones that, you know, we need to somehow chase to come to your event. So it's this mix. And to answer the question about Barcelona, first, don't take only French people, way too many French people, too arrogant French people in Barcelona. Two, trying to have people that come kind of on their own. Last year, we had no budget for travel at all, so we had to do some exceptions, but and try to stick to that.
Like the person from Anthropic, you need a budget for if they're flying in from California or from London.
And even it's not that sure, because everybody's, like last year was not a choice to not have budget for the speakers. It was like we didn't have it. And at the end, after the summit, some professional about this kind of event said us, you've done it well, because like usually the good speakers don't receive money for to come. They come because they want and that. And so we understood this stuff that helped us a lot. That's why we were saying at the beginning, it's good to not have money because there is a lot of mistakes that you cannot do. So you don't do it. Like when you begin to organize this summit, you have a huge amount of people that explain you that they are the best speakers and that's the price. So if you begin like that, finally, it's not that they are not good speakers, but the money that you put here, you don't put in other stuff. So it's like how to manage it. So for example, the speakers from Anthropic, I don't know. We don't know it yet. But I think they will even don't ask for this accommodation because it's the people that don't need it.
Yeah, but if we have to pay for, I mean, if Elon Musk wants to come, we're happy to participate to the private jet flight. But what Jeremy was saying is true, is that some, you know, good speakers, that when you attract them because they want to talk, they want to share, they kind of value your event. They don't ask for money like that, you know, like they don't want to be paid. Sometimes you have to pay for the travel and the hotel.
Yeah. I didn't mean paying for to give a talk, just for the flights and accommodation.
Exactly. But even that, some speakers coming from like the US last year didn't, you know, well, they are filthy rich. I mean, AI companies have a lot of money. No, but it's a good signal. I mean, what Jeremy, I think, was saying is that it's a good signal. They say, okay, no, I'm not going to like look, you know, I'm not going to beg for you to cover. Probably this year we'll have more flexibility, but it's not like, we have to stick to what made our original success.
So the only important message is if Elon Musk listen this podcast, we are able to participate.
Just a portion.
There's this one thing, Guillaume. Let me just go back to what you said about, you know, comparing this moment to sort of like the birth and the explosion of the internet. Because I usually make this same comparison, especially when people go, I can't take about people talking about AI anymore. It's just like talking like, I can't take you talking about the internet anymore. Like, doesn't even make sense. Considering that, I don't know if you had the time to actually watch the talks last year from the event that you put together, because it must be pretty hectic on D-Day, right? But still, is there something you took from the event that sort of changed either the way you look at, I'll use the broader term AI, or even practical things that you adopted in your day-to-day from the event that you put together?
Well, I have a good story about that. You're right, we did not have the time to look at anything. So there were four stages, so even if we had to multiply ourselves by five or six to be able to attend the scene, to be on the scenes and to and also to overlook the other aspect. I had a last minute speaker. His name is Anis Ayari. It's quite well known. He has a big YouTube channel in France that came last minute because one of our speakers just, you know, canceled very last minute. And because he was doing the travel from Marseille in train to Barcelona, I was taking care of him and I listened to his talk. And actually, his talk was about presenting his GEO software. And so out of this, and I am a CMO in a B2C company. So I actually, because I was kind of forced by a last minute speaker to attend to his talk, you know, I called him the day before he came in. I wasn't, okay, you talk on the stage and, you know, and I go away. I was trying to be polite, as my mother told me to. But then I really learned things about GEO that are, you know, that are very useful to my day-to-day job. Although, I mean, GEO is like a big, big topic. So yes, you're right in the sense that there are a lot of subtopics that are really AI linked, because the question is there, what is really AI? If everything is AI, nothing is AI. It's like the AI of Schrödinger by some sense. But you have to consider the AI in your day-to-day job. Like, okay, I don't write emails anymore. And this is kind of already in the machine. But you also have to think about the new market it created. And I think like the GEO is a good example of, you know, new ways of addressing clients or addressing. So it's very wide, but if you are able to distribute it between, you know, what it changed in the existing processes and which new processes or new artifacts it creates, then you can find yourself learning things, basically.
It's very interesting because we literally just had a couple of interviews on the podcast about GEO and people were also like mind blown about it.
Well, yeah, I can have a podcast only about GEO because I think there's still a lot of uncertainty and some sort of bullshit too. Mm. But yeah, but I mean, for most of people that are doing their business thanks to a website, this is one key big topic, especially for B2C's marketers. And of course, we have to cover this topic. Although, and it's also a good example because it's an example where, you know, AI is changing something, but you don't exactly know yet. You probably will never know, but you'll have to adapt. So it's a living example of the AI changes, like concretely my traffic coming to my website, or is even my website useful anymore? That's opening a lot of doors with a lot of questions. So did all, you know, talk about GEO is needed in such kind of events because people are really wondering what the hell is going to happen to their business.
Makes sense. Yeah. And another topic that you guys mentioned was the point of Barcelona has a huge community of expats, but not only of, it's a tech hub in Europe at this point. And you said that it makes it easier to create such an event as well. Were you already part of this tech community before creating the event? And I mean, I've been to one of the things that you organized, the Cloud Code Meetup, together with Olivier from Anthropic. I mean, he's Cloud Code Ambassador for Anthropic.
He's Ambassador, yeah.
Exactly. So this is basically improving and feeding the Barcelona community, what you did with this meetup. But before that, did you have stuff as well?
Yeah, Guillaume can talk about, I will say it for him. One of the reasons that Guillaume was the guy that I call when I had this idea was because he was a friend, and because he's the president of the French Tech Barcelona, one of the most dynamic expatriate community, tech community. So for sure, it helped a lot. That's why we had to be careful to not being French event in Barcelona, because it was not the goal. But in addition to that, we are really feeling, and everybody seems agree in a stuff, that there is a momentum around Barcelona, maybe even a momentum about Europe. We now are feeling that during years and years and years, we critiqued ourselves, European people, like people who don't know how to do tech. And now maybe the light is here at the end of the tunnel, because, okay, there is US like that, China like that. Okay, maybe Europe finally understood how she's having to act to be the third voice. And in this momentum, Barcelona, since years and years and years, is building a huge ecosystem. And now Barcelona seems to be maybe mature to take her place in this ecosystem. And I think one of the key points of Barcelona of that is the expatriate system, because there is this, it's one of the rare cities that is able to mix a really local culture, which is Catalan culture, a country, a really dynamic economic country, which is Spain, and a huge European and non-European, as you guys, expat culture. So when you add all these layers together and put the beach, the sun, the rooftop, and all this stuff, it's kind of the magic of Barcelona. And I mean, we just enjoyed this point. As Guillaume said, like Guillaume built this community almost from scratch. Here and now it's one of the most dynamic expat community. But finally, we just enjoy, we just being opportunist one other time, enjoyed what we have and build someone on something on that, on this.
Yeah, I think to that, I mean, Barcelona is like Babel. You know, it's really such a cosmopolitan city. You barely hear Spanish in the street. Whether it's good or bad, you hear Catalan, still hear Catalan, but you hear all the languages. And
I play a game with myself because I like languages and I learned many, many languages over the years. And every time I'm walking around the city, I try to guess what people are speaking. And it's like every single time I can hear at least 10 languages. Yeah. It's very easy.
That's, and I mean, I've been living in Barcelona since 2011. So nearly 15 years, and it was not like this back in the days. I mean, if you go back to the history of Barcelona and make it short, the Barcelona did not really exist on the world map before the Olympics. And actually, because they crashed everything, they rebuilt a lot of things.
The beach even. There was no beach in Barcelona.
And it was like small fishermen houses just on the sea. No beach. It's a fake beach. And so it's one of the rare cases where the Olympics absolutely changed the destiny of a city. Of course, it has its argument. You know, it's very connected. It's, yeah, there's the beach, the sun, the quality of life. But that kind of happened also. So that was opening Barcelona to the rest of the world 30 and so years ago. And I've seen the equivalent in the tech scene that 15 years ago when I came in Barcelona was mainly call centers spaces because people were cheap and could speak more than one language, which was not the case in many other European cities. And so the city attracted this first immigration wave for cheap jobs on the phone. And it progressively went up to the stage we are today because the city and the Generalitat, you know, the region, the Generalitat de Catalunya, invested with events, we've invested a lot in the attractivity of the city, up to a point where, you know, there was probably 10 years ago, people just realized kind of overnight that the city had all the argument to become a key tech hub in Europe, maybe in the world. The local people will think in the world, but it's like it at least became one of the central hubs in Europe because of quality of life, because of liquidity of talents. The fact that you hear 10 languages, those are people that are speaking many languages, so they can serve many markets and operate markets from here. And that's one of the key arguments for foreign companies to come and settle either office or even the headquarters in Barcelona, is because they know they're going to find the resources and the talent. And in the last 10 years, it really grew because, you know, you have this snowball effect of Glovo being created, attracting talents, these talents creating their own company, attracting other kind of talents. And that's where we land now with having such a big expat community and a very mature local ones of, you know, that again did not exist 15 years ago. So it's also why when I took the French Tech Association 7 years ago, it was an easy, you know, it was kind of a cheat code. Like, you know that many French people were coming to the city, so you just, and those are people that are happy to meet, so you have the raw material that is absolutely amazing because people are working in an environment or the market that is growing, so that makes people happy, you know, as opposed to, you know, dying markets. And they live in Barcelona and they enjoy their lives. So those are the two elements you take together and you easily create communities because communities are based on common interest and excitement. And basically, I was happy to be heading the French Tech since 2019 with an easy job to do, because if you just gather people that are happy to work in the tech industry and that do enjoy Barcelona, you basically have nothing to do to make it working. I mean, you have to work a lot, but you have the bottom line of things that are really key to success.
And what does the French community entail? Like, what do the, is it like a accelerator, or is it more for networking, or both?
It's basically, it's basically to drink fine wine. it's a very local association. Our goal, and we have 100K French people living in Barcelona, approximately. Not officially, probably half of it, but unofficially, close to 100,000 French people live in Barcelona. 10% are working in the tech industry. So all we do is we try to create the conditions for good networking. Because those people, you know, they're, again, people that are expat, they don't have their families or old friends or close friends, and so they have time. And if you put those people together and say, okay, let's do some networking, they are quite eager to that, to meet new people, to make friends. So our role is only to help people to make friends. We don't have, we don't receive any money from the government, any grant or anything. So we don't have these official programs to fund, to fund startups. This is not, and I would be strange that the French government pays people in other countries for helping them to create companies. So it's very networking based. Obviously, it's helping companies that want to settle in Barcelona answering some questions, because many, you know, when you had 200 calls on that topic, you kind of know what you're talking about. But it's mainly, and we also have some tools or this podcast studio to, you know, re-help the French community and beyond, but, you know, mostly the French community to interact. And that's really our sole goal, is to make it, to have the French tech people talking, if you know, networking in an efficient way.
And still speaking about community, last year you said the event had 1,500 people. When it's at this scale, it's already big, all right, but it still has a one communal feeling to it. When you scale it to 10,000 plus people, it must be hard to keep that community feeling. You just spoke to the fact that your role with this event is to offered a chance for people to connect sort of like by themselves, since they all gravitated to the event, right? But you're still holding a sort of like satellite events, right? There's the hackathon and side events as well to maybe try to keep this community sense of togetherness and closeness sort of alive.
I mean, like one of the reasons that we felt that we have to go big is to exist, there is a critical size. For example, to have some key speakers, key companies, key topics, you have to exist. You need critical size because like 1,500 people is good event, but it's not sufficient to a lot of stuff. And then the people, the city, the companies, etc., was kind of waiting for that. So that's why we thought, okay, let's do it. To keep this community stuff, it's just the way that we are doing it, that we are building it. For example, you talked about, we talked about the summit, but really the summit is 2 days of main events at the World Trade Center Barcelona, what we are talking about. But it's to an inaugural moment at Norsken, which is a great other community hub in Barcelona, a huge hackathon with 500 people physically in Barcelona in great condition, which will be one of the biggest in Spain. An accelerator week that we will announce soon the details, but basically we will accelerate between 20 and 50 startups during the week. It's not decided yet, but we are talking about maybe some events around for kids, for them to discover AI, etc. And around that, we build the community partner program, which is basically every organization, people or company that want to be to join the effort can contact us, say, hey, I would love to be community partner. We just basically ask how you can contribute, which is normally giving us some visibility and helping us in the communication, because we need to spread it and we don't have the budget to go on TV and to pay millions in Google, you know. So that's why we are doing. But all these community partners have the possibility, if they are motivated to organize their own side events, and they will do it by their own. So we think that we'll have minimum of 50 side events during the week. So we are organizing the main congress, which is 2 days, the hackathon, the accelerator week, maybe the something for the kids. And then all the actors that will want to do will organize their own. Like, I mean, last year it was from a paddle tournament to some really really serious conference. And for us, that's Barcelona. I mean, like, people will organize meetup running on the beach. It's exactly the way that things are doing.
Ah, maybe we can do beach volley this year. Well, you know, what we also discovered, I mean, although I've been doing for the French like a lot of events in the past years, is that an event has success when side events are coming in the game. It was surprising to see that at the end, I know we had 14 or 15 side events, although everything was organized in 3 months. And so this year we're, you know, trying to organize it a bit better to have close to 50 side events. But it's amazing how, you know, a success, and we all felt it when we went to events. You know, we've all been to fairs and say, yeah, the fair is nice, you know, I'm going stand to stand, but I'm waiting for, like, kind of the small VIP dinner I've been invited, or my friend is going to such an event. And so the success at an event comes in part from the side events you are invited to. And that's amazing, because out of those 15 or 14, we were not managing, but just kind of displaying the name on the website and just saying some kind of a yes. But we were not originally organizing the side events. And the first one came in, someone saying, yeah, I would like to do a side event during your event. It was like, eh, what are you talking about? And at the end, you know, it was like this. And really see that a successful event comes from the activity generates around.
And my last question for you too is, there's this thing that Fabrizio and I, we usually observe here on the podcast, that France is disproportionately well represented in AI in general, right? You go back to Yann LeCun way back then, and the new generation with Randall Balestriero. You have Mistral as well, that is like this huge name in AI. Why is that? What makes France such a fertile ground for AI research and companies and technology?
No, that's a very quick question. I think, you know, what the legend is that we have good engineering schools. And if you look at where Yann Lequin went to, where most of the guys you've heard about went to, they all went to the same schools. The Mistral guys, and the Mistral guys came from Normale de Sup, which is like the one top school for mathematics in France, and Polytechnique. So you cannot, you know, you cannot avoid the fact that the, you know, US companies are basically interested in those top profiles. So they are from everywhere in the world. But yes, there is a pattern that makes France more represented. As we did not do those scores, I cannot explain the real details in it. Only we are in contact with, we are working with the responsible of MetaFair. So MetaFair is this one, you know, BU. I don't even know if we can call it a BU in Meta that actually pays for the PhDs, with like, you know, with the commitment that you would spend 2-3 years in Meta.
And Yann Lequin was there until very recently, right?
Okay. Yeah. He was Yann Lequin, and the guy below him is helping us for to find some speakers. But that's what Yann Lequin was also doing. And the Mistral guys went through this this program, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know why French engineers are so well, you know, considered. But that's a fact. So I don't want to be arrogant and say that we all are genius. I will leave a blank.
And maybe if we want to play with this legend, okay. Or there is always two sides in the quality. I love the fact that saying that your main quality is also your main default. So maybe the French arrogance, which is true, let's say, allow French people to maybe try some more stuff. It could be like, I mean, like each country and each culture has the good and the bad sides. I don't know if French are good entrepreneurs, but what we saw, it's true that we have a lot of good friends that are trying to build some stuff. And in the world now, which we all feel that all is possible, but all is easier and more complicated at the same time. That's why we say AI for builders. It's one of our most important track in AI, like just people that are trying to build. Okay, they have a chance to succeed. So that's why I don't know if French are more genius, but maybe they are trying more in AI. I'm not sure about it.
But I have another point, because you did not mention Fiji Simo, she just went, you know, she's on a sick leave. She just announced yesterday that she was going on a sick leave. She used to be intern when I was working at eBay. So it was my most successful LinkedIn post. So thank you, Fiji. I stole your famousness. There's also one thing that, you know, the sad part in what we're saying is that we're talking about the French successful entrepreneurs that had to go to the US to succeed. And I think if we take all the nationalities, you have this diaspora in Brazilian, in, you know, in Spanish. And we also, if you look, you know, when Jamie was talking about, you know, the good and the bad of everything, is also that I think it sends back the message to Europe that if it was easier to build European giant, then maybe you would less know, you know, those people that made a career at Meta. So why, Yann Lequin, you also have to consider that, okay, Yann Lequin might be a genius, but why did he express this, you know, this characteristic with Meta and not with what he's building now? That's true. But also that, you know, the Europe creates a diaspora of ambitious entrepreneurs, and that's not the best part of the story.
Okay, and before we finish, for whoever is here around Barcelona or wants to come here to Barcelona and is listening to this podcast, they, Guillaume and Jeremy and Tanguy and the whole AI Summit community, they were kind enough to create a discount code for everyone here. So the discount code is Sob Controle, like the podcast, IA Sob Controle, Sob Controle 20. That is going to be here in the description as well. So if you buy with this coupon, you can get 20% discount for the conference if you want to join here.
That is awesome. Very generous of you. Thank you so much for your time, for sharing your knowledge with us. If folks maybe want to know more about the Barcelona AI Summit, even continue this conversation with you too, maybe, where do they go?
Would be a pleasure. Well, they can find us on LinkedIn. They can find us, well, I think the easier way is on LinkedIn, and there is the AISummitBarcelona.com website with all the information. So just contact us by these points. We will not give us our phone number here, because if not, we will have a lot of calls for have free tickets and we'll not be able to manage it. The French people will do that.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Awesome. Muito obrigado. Então tá aí, 22 e 23 de setembro em Barcelona. Vocês têm já o cupom de desconto e aproveita, porque se você entrar no site agora, tá falando que vai aumentar o preço em breve. Então, para quem quiser ir, pode ir. Mas se você não estiver em Barcelona, estiver aqui no Brasil em setembro, você também pode ir na IA Conference Brasil 2026, que rola no dia 24 de setembro em São Paulo, no Centro de Convenções Frei Caneca. E se você for em iaconferencebrasil.com.br, o link está na descrição para facilitar, você pode ver não só os participantes que até agora estão confirmados em mais por aí, inclusive o que o Fabrício tinha dado spoiler, deixa eu trazer o Matt Veloso, vai ser o keynote speaker, mas tem o Felipe Lauer, Rodrigo Nogueira da Maritaca, o Felipe da Inter, né? Também a Roberta Duarte da A4C, o Pedro Gengo, nosso amigo da Runway, que em breve vai estar por aqui, spoiler. O Matheus Borges também da Rankia, Dr. Felipe Kitamura, radiologista, que já participou por aqui também, Gustavo de Rosa da Microsoft, e o Pena, Roberto Spinelli, e também o Vitor Moreira, né? Os cofundadores da Caramelo Bionico, todo mundo já passou por aqui. Vem mais nome por aí, mas se você for no LinkedIn deles e pedir o cupom de desconto, você também pode garantir um desconto para estar lá no dia 24 de setembro e participar, testemunhar o maior evento de IA e tecnologia do Brasil. E eu e o Fabrício estaremos por lá também, estaremos por aqui também na sexta-feira com o nosso resumão das notícias do mundo da inteligência artificial. Até lá!
Este podcast foi produzido pela Alura. Mergulhe em tecnologia. E Faculdade FIAP. Let's Rock the Future. Edição Rede Gigahertz de Podcasts.